Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Disky Discussions. I'm your host, AB Basson. The international break is here, but the fun doesn't stop as we look forward to Africa Cup of Nations qualifying fixtures coming up this month. South Africa will host Sao Tomo and Principe in back-to-back matches in Durban and Port Elizabeth. Joining me to discuss this and much more is former Bafana Bafana international, Matthew Booth. Matthew, thanks for joining me. Firstly, if we can just jump straight into Bafana Bafana. We've got two, huge qualifiers, maybe not against the biggest team, 182nd ranked team in the world, but very important for Bafana Bafana's cause, going into, trying to qualify for the Africa Cup of Nations, which is now being pushed back to 2022.
Yeah, so, I mean, locally in the PSL, you hear coaches talking about lack of goals, it's like, it's the boring old soundbite, and the national team as well has also struggled, no doubt. So these two qualifiers will give them a fantastic opportunity to get their confidence back, especially in front of goal. And obviously it's very important that we can't let them trip us up in any way. So there's a fine balance between being overconfident and confidence. So hopefully we get that right, but one loss against Ghana, one win against Sudan at home, these two qualifiers have come at the right time to give us 6 points and give us a massive boost for the qualifiers.
We had disappointing results against Namibia and Zambia in friendlies last month, and we saw Keegan Dolly speaking about South Africa taking smaller teams, a bit lightly. I mean, we think back about, qualifiers against Ethiopia and Sierra Leone and years gone past. What is it? What mindset has to change? I mean, coming up on the 19th of November is our anniversary of our 1-0 win against Spain when they were World Cup champions. What has to change when we're playing these so-called smaller teams?
Yeah, I agree with Keegan, but people have to also realize that when we do play against these smaller teams, it's normally not our first choice starting lineup. For example, against Namibia and Zambia, Nseke did try and cast the net quite a bit wider. And for a footballer, as soon as you do that, as soon as you bring in new faces, it causes the possibility of an inconsistency, creeping into the team, because you're having to adjust. Whether you're playing with a new centre-back pairing, whether you're playing with a new goalkeeper behind you, it just causes that inconsistency. And that gives the opportunity for the smaller teams to sneak a result. If you have your first choice A team going out there on a regular, playing against big teams and small teams, then I would perhaps that would be cause for concern. But I think we make too much of a meal of these friendly games where the coach does want to try out new faces, and the results don't come our way, and we think, oh, well, it's the same old. So I think in the next two qualifiers, well, the last four qualifiers will be really a true test for the team, and we can then judge them on those four remaining African Nations Cup qualifiers.
We can maybe just focus on you for the next few questions. Growing up in Cape Town and becoming a professional in Cape Town and playing for Cape Town Spurs, obviously they've been resurrected now in a different form as the former Ajax. I mean, they were obviously independent club back in the 90s and very successful club at that. What was it like playing for them back then? And what do you expect from, you know, the new Cape Town Spurs?
Yeah, so when I joined them from Fishhook AFC, I joined them at a stage where they were winning things. You know, they had a raft of quality players. David Rodwell, who owned Sioux City, had garnered together a fantastic squad under Mish Davre and Terry Akhurst. So as a youngster coming in there when into a winning team was great. Playing alongside guys like Ronnie Zondi, Michael Jacobs, you know, David Modise, the list, the Sean Bartlett's, you know, the list goes on. The late Reggie Junchies. It was a fantastic team. And only when they actually should have won the league in 94, and then David Rodwell gave it one last go and won the double in 95, and then subsequently sold the team. And when he sold the team, a lot of the younger players were thrown in the deep end, which is when I started to play on the regular. So a fantastic team with a lot of history. And then when Ajax took over, I left a bitter taste in my mouth, because not only was I not seen, I wasn't seen as being good enough to play for the team, but also a foreign entity coming over and taking over part of your, well, starting to run your club, you lose sovereignty, you know, and that's, I was a little bit suspicious at the time of their intentions. But as it turns out, I think their footprint that they've left in South Africa has been a positive one. Often you get foreign coaches coming to South Africa and they just take the money and then they run and they leave your establishment, your institution, your league without anything tangible left behind. And I think Ajax has definitely done that in leaving something tangible behind. They've left a footprint. But having said that, I'm quite happy to have that name back in our game. It's a game that we should never, it's a name that we shouldn't have lost. And happy that Spurs is back. Obviously, their first objective is to get back into the Premier League. In the NFD, we all know that it's a dog-eat-dog world, and the remuneration every month is, there's a big disparity between the two. So to make it the running of a football club feasible, you've really got to get into the Premier League, which is what they've got to do.
You touched briefly there on the merging of Cape Town Spurs and Seven Stars to form Ajax Cape Town. And obviously, like you mentioned, you weren't kept, you know, to form part of the first Ajax Cape Town team. But that all jumped, obviously, that all came to life because of a certain Benny McCarthy, in essence. It's his birthday actually today. You know, recording on his birthday. How good of a player was he back then? And I mean, did you ever think that he would become such a good player? Obviously, still South Africa's only Champions League winner and our all-time top scorer.
Yeah, so Benny and I played in the South African national under 20 team for a number of years. And before that, at Cape Town Spurs, where he had a short stint. And you already knew of his name. He grew up playing a lot of his football in the Sunday League, Cape Town Sunday League or Gangster League, which has produced and helped to develop a number of players from Cape Town. And when he arrived, when I first saw him, the best way to describe him was silky smooth in the box. He knew where the goals were. He knew which options to take. He didn't need an extra touch to get it onto the right foot. He was incredibly good with his back to goal. And probably one of the best goals that I've ever seen, the best technical goals that I've ever seen. And this is not showing any bias, but the header at the near post against Man United when he was playing for Porto in the Champions League, managing to beat two defenders who were on his back and the goalkeeper at the near post when the ball was slightly behind him to get that amount of power from the neck muscles was for me one of the best goals that I've seen. And he scored a lot of them as well. So, that's the best way that I can sum up Benny. And we've had some fantastic players that have gone over to Europe. And for him to have won the Champions League with an unfancied Porto, he's one of the best. You know, I put him in the same category as Lucas Radebe, as a South African who we can be, you know, really proud of and who really made their mark in Europe.
After leaving Cape Town, you popped up at Mamelodi Sundowns. How were those first, you know, your first spell at the club? How was your first spell at the club? What do you remember most fondly of your time? You know, Sundowns had then already established himself as a real force in South African football.
Oh yeah, what I remember most is winning the double in my first season.
So that was, that helps.
That was something fantastic. Yeah, it helped. And very similar to Cape Town Spurs, I was rather fortunate to arrive at a team which was brimming full of confidence. They had already won the previous two league titles, and when I arrived, I helped them to win their third in a row, plus the Rothmans Cup. So. That was great. And, you know, having played at Cape Town Spurs and always come up against Sundowns, there were very few occasions where we had actually beaten them. So I got an idea of what sort of team they were. Cape Town Spurs actually had quite a decent record, the record against Chiefs and Pirates, if I can remember correctly. But whenever we played Sundowns, we always came unstuck. So to be able to join them instead of getting beaten by them was kind of a relief, you know. They had a big striker, Rafael Chuku, who had thighs that were bigger than my waist, you know. So coming up against him twice or thrice a season wasn't very pleasant. So I was happy to have joined them.
Who's the best players you played with? Roger Futembo was obviously there at the time. Are there any other players that really stand out from that Sundowns team?
The list can go on, AB. You know, Roger, I think, was the best. I don't particularly like saying that because he only used his left foot. He used his right foot for standing on. And, you know, any youngster that I try to train or coach, I always impress on them the value of using both feet. But just somehow Roger got away with it, you know. He had fantastic vision. He hardly ever got caught out with the ball. He played at one pace. And even in the big games, he always used to find the right pockets and enormous amounts of space. And he had an extremely cultured left foot. But I think also Mambush, Daniel Mutau, his strike rate was really phenomenal. And there were just elements of that team which just gelled together. Generally, we played a 3-5-2 system. So the players that we had in the squad just suited the system, especially when it came to the wing-backs. The likes of Eric Ramasiki, Isaac Shai, Joel Masilela. We had players, Themba Mnguni. We had players who can play in that role. It's quite a specialized role. A lot of teams these days are not quite getting it right when they try to attempt that the wing-back system. But we definitely had it, and that's why we were quite dominant. And then I think also a highlight of mine was then getting to the Champions League final in 2001 against Al Ahly. For a South African team at that stage to be able to get to that final was quite something.
And then for yourself, it was off to England. You've spoken briefly in the past about a failed move to West Ham United. If you can maybe just touch on that, and you know, looking back at your career, is that one regret you might have? Might have not playing in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, that definitely was it. I had a number of trials as a younger player. One of them was going to West Ham. They had showed some interest in me after my performance against Brazil in the Sydney Olympics.
Yeah,
and I spent a week there, and I was looked after very well. They've got a great youth setup. I trained alongside with the likes of Paulo Di Canio, Stuart Pearce. And they really had a Rio Ferdinand was there. And the reason why they showed interest was because Rio was being sold to Leeds United and they needed a replacement centre-back. Harry Redknapp was quite impressed with my week that I'd spent there. And it looked very positive until Sundowns asked for too much money, really, at that stage. You know, I'd only had a handful of Bafana caps. And the kind of money that they were asking for was, there was no ways that West Ham was going to pay that for a South African lad who hasn't had any Premier League experience. So that fell through. And at the time, I remember not really thinking too much about it because you know perhaps you're still quite young and you might have something better lined up down the line. But in hindsight, after my career, it's something that I look back on and I'm quite disappointed about it because that was the closest I got to playing in the Premier League. And as a result of that failed move, Natasha Chiklis, who was the owner of Sundowns at the time, arranged for me to go to Wimbledon through the Wimbledon club owner by the surname of Klopp. And he was a South African businessman who owned Wimbledon at the time. Mm. And another piece of advice that I give youngsters is that whenever you do go on trial, whenever you do move to a new club, make sure that the manager or coach knows that you are coming because that wasn't the case for me. And it sounds odd that I didn't, but you know, as a youngster, you assume that the manager or coach is expecting you. And so I spent 3 months at Wimbledon playing for the reserve team because, as you can imagine, arriving at the senior training and the head coach not knowing anything about me, it wasn't going to go very well. Surprisingly, I got some interest from Nottingham Forest through that reserve league. But nothing transpired.
Who were some of the players that you might have trained with at Wimbledon? Was the likes of, I think any football fan will know Vinnie Jones, Crazy Bunch. Were any of those guys present at the time?
No, so that was a generation earlier. There wouldn't have been anybody that you might have recognized. Although at the time, the Michael Thomas, ex-Arsenal player, was playing in the reserve team. His career was coming to an end. So you spotted, Fabian Delph came through, and I played a couple of games in the reserve team with Delph. He was a clear talent then, and you heard, of a number of clubs being interested in him already. So those are two names, perhaps that people might recognize. But it wasn't a great time for me. I was lacking confidence, and I could tell that I was clearly not wanted or expected at the club. So. I try to expunge that from my CV. I'm sorry that you brought it up.
Moving swiftly along then, You went on to play in Russia for Rostov. How was that experience? I think for a lot of players, especially from Africa, it is quite difficult, the Russian league. But we've had obviously a lot of success there. You know, think of, you know, guys like Ahmed Musa, what he did at CSK Moscow. What was it like playing in Russia, and how different was it to, you know, playing in sunny South Africa most of the time?
Yeah, so the late Jacob Lecheto was the first one to go over, and he really impressed the Russians. He became a legend at Lokomotiv Moscow at left back. And Viktor Bondarenko, who was the coach at Sundowns, basically negotiated for myself and Gif Kampamba to go over to Rostov, who were in a bit of trouble. And I was at the stage of my career where I knew I needed to start making euros or dollars. And I took the chance without really knowing anything about the league, without knowing anything about Russia, except for the usual stereotypes, you know. It's cold, they have beautiful women, and they drink lots of vodka, you know, and there's bears walking in the street, you know, that type of thing, you know. But it's such...
there's elephants walking in the street in South Africa.
You realize that yes, exactly. So once you arrive there, you realize that it's such an enormous country. You can fit South Africa into it at 14, 15 times, you know, and you just can't generalize about the place. What's more, it's something that I would encourage any young player to try and get out of your comfort zone here in South Africa. Go and travel, go and live overseas. It's an education. From a football point of view, play against better players. You'll be coached by better coaches. It will be a test of character. You know, you'll be by yourself. You'll perhaps be injured going back to a cold apartment among strangers. It's a true character builder. So it's something that I always tell younger players to try and attempt. And you will become a better product. And therefore, you'll add value to Bafana Bafana, should you be called up. And I arrived there in 2002 when they were spending a lot of their petrodollars on the league, very similar to the MLS.
Yeah.
Attempting to raise the status of the league. So I played against a number of quality players who were brought into the league, and spent 6 fantastic years there before the Confederations Cup and World Cup here in South Africa. And with my eldest son, Nathan, who was at the time 4 years old, we decided to come back to South Africa for his schooling, and also to try and cement my place in Bafana Bafana.
You talk about the return to South Africa, played for Sundowns, Ajax, and Bidvest Wits. How did you find the league changed, you know, from when you left to when you returned?
From a playing style, I don't think it had changed much. I think from an administration point of view, the league, you could see, had taken enormous steps in becoming more and more professional. Just the fixture lists, the running of the fixture lists, the television coverage was definitely a couple of steps above from when I left. So that was pleasant to know. The introduction of Patrice Motsepe to the game as well, to Sundowns, also changed the outlook, the landscape for players and what they can demand from a salary point of view. So I think that was also good for players. You know, the Kutsia ruling as well in 2001 had changed the fortunes of players. So those were the two major changes that had occurred while I was in Russia.
You touched briefly on Patrice Motsepe, obviously this week making big news with his bid to run for CAF presidency and you know, endorsed by SAFA and Danny Yordan. What do you think of the news? And do you think it is a role that will suit him and will be for the betterment of African football?
You know, he's obviously chosen. It's now clear why he invested or allowed the MPO to sponsor SAFA's one of SAFA's tiers. Mm. You can now understand why he did it. I don't necessarily think that Patrice has gone the traditional route in this regard. Although he's been the owner of a very successful football club, I think to run African football, you need to have had a history with CAF, more of an ingrained history with CAF, to know the inner workings of the organization. So in that regard, I don't think he's suited. But having said that, he obviously has the monetary backing. And if he is able to delegate correctly, should he get the position, then it can be a success for him. It can be a success for Africa. And certainly it would be good for South African football. But to be honest with you, no matter who runs for CAF president, it's very similar to a politician. You know, I'm always very suspicious these days of the intentions. And ultimately, if you don't have good intentions for the continent or for your country, then you shouldn't be running. And I think that question can only be asked to Patrice. And even then, we can only really truly see his intentions once he gets into power. So it's a tricky one, but it can certainly be good for South African football. And it's very similar to a South African player going to Europe and making a success for himself. It's very similar, you know, when you have administrators and your own business people and people that you know getting into positions of power outside of our borders. You know, you've got to be proud of that fact.
You mentioned the impact made by Patrice in the South African League. Obviously, had a massive impact on Peter Mosimane and how his career skyrocketed over the last 7 to 8 years. Obviously, Peter has got a big say in that as well, having brought a lot of success to Sundowns. He's got a massive game coming up in the end of this month, end of November, CAF Champions League final. Obviously, you can't take all the credit, having, you know, joined the team at the semi-final stage. But how big of a win will it be for South Africa if he's able to lead Al Ahly to their 9th title?
Well, it would be massive. And what I like about what they've done is that they haven't changed too much. You know, they haven't rocked the boat. And that was very intelligent of them. His main job was to pacify the players. And it certainly helps when you come in to a new team, a massive team like Al Ahly, with a big CV yourself and having recently played against them, so that they know exactly what he's about. Unlike, again, an unknown, perhaps European coach coming on board or some arbitrary person, you know, who's not particularly qualified. So his CV holds weight. And the job that Pizzo had to do was to gain the confidence of the squad as soon as he hit the ground in Cairo. And that's clearly what he did, just judging from the results that he produced. So that for me alone was very impressive.
You would have worked with Pizzo at national team level. It's been 10 years now since the World Cup in South Africa. What have we learned over the last 10 years? And with the money, do you feel that the money that was invested in South African football back then has been adequately used and the resources Considering where we are today with the national team and where we are ranked, and consider across the globe as a soccer entity?
Yeah, so naturally, leading up to the World Cup, I was dead keen for the World Cup to come to South Africa. I was very excited. I was a player. It was a chance for me to play on the biggest stage in the world, coming towards the end of my career. So I was very excited about it. But hindsight is a beautiful thing, and I feel that we've been left with some great infrastructure, not necessarily very useful to the large majority of South Africans. We've, as a football industry, we've at last got football-specific stadiums, so we don't have to go and beg and borrow and steal from rugby. But other than that, we've been left with very little tangible development possibilities. And, you know, if you look around the country, there are actually very few developmental facilities, sustainable programs, and coaching possibilities, you know, educational possibilities. So SAFA, I don't think, took advantage of the euphoria that was surrounding leading up to and post World Cup to garner support for initiatives going forward. They failed dismally in that regard. And I would love to know what's happened to the 450 million rand plus legacy fund, because as a stakeholder, I might be out of the game now, but I've got two young boys who love the game, and I would like to know what's happened to those funds and where have they been allocated and distributed to. So I think post World Cup, I think SAFA have dropped the baton, and we could have been in a totally different space right now if they had put attention to grassroots football, not only in our metros, but all around the country. And therefore, we wouldn't be shouting and complaining at Bafana every time they play, if that had happened. Because I keep on telling people, you know, Bafana Bafana is not the issue. You know, you can keep on throwing money at Bafana Bafana. It's not the issue. Go down to your local football club, your amateur club, your LFA, get involved there, and you will quickly see why we are not maximizing our enormous pool of talent, our natural talent. You know, who's coaching the coaches? You know, I speak to ex-professionals all the time who complain bitterly about the lack of coaching seminars and the ability to educate ourselves in coaching. And there are thousands and thousands upon of school teachers and guys, people who love the game, who also want to coach and are not getting the ability to do so. So I think that's the real concern for me, is that everything is focused at the top, and nobody's willing to roll up their sleeves and institute, first of all, facilities, build facilities, secure good facilities, implement sustainable programs, and get coaches on the ground to coach our kids. And what's more, I believe that every little girl should be getting the same opportunity as every little boy as well. That's a huge market that we've missed out on, big time, is the women's game.
Yeah. Well, Matthew, we appreciate your insight and your knowledge into the game and giving us a bit of background on your journey in football. We wish you all the best, and thanks for giving us some time.
Cheers. No problem, maybe.
In next week's episode, we'll be joined by another prominent name in South African soccer circles as we review Bafana Bafana's performances and switch our focus back to domestic action. If you have any questions or things you'd like us to discuss on Diski Discussions, please hit me up at AB_Basson on Twitter or on Instagram. Aware and keep safe.